Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Thursday, December 1st, 2022. I'm Naima Latif. And in the news today, the White House is seeking to prevent a threatened rail strike. As railway workers threaten to strike unless demands are met, the White House held a press briefing on measures being taken to prevent that strike, which would be a major economic blow during this season. We're joining a White House press conference by Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Hey, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Oh, nice. Okay. Get into the spirit, folks. Okay, so we are pleased to welcome President and Mrs. Macron and the delegation from France to the United States. Above all, this visit is a celebration of the strong French-U.S. relationship and the personal relationship between President Biden and President Macron. Just a few hours ago, President Macron joined Vice President Harris for a briefing at NASA headquarters. The visit underscores our deepening collaboration on space and came on the heels of the very first U.S.-France comprehensive space dialogue, which was held in Paris last month, and it delivers on a commitment made by Vice President Harris and President Macron during her visit to Paris last year. Looking towards tomorrow, I know everyone is eager to hear more details about the state dinner itself. Today, the First Lady is actually about happening right now, is hosting a media preview with the White House Social Secretary, Carlos Elizondo, followed by presentations from White House Executive Chef Chris Comerford and White House Executive Pastry Chef Susie Morrison. At that preview, they are sharing information about the menu and the decor for the state dinner. I also wanted to share some good economic news. First this morning, we learned that our economy grew at even stronger pace in the third quarter than we previously thought. American consumers continue to spend and American businesses continue to invest here at home at even higher, at even stronger pace. Second, as of today, the average price of gas is now below $3.50 a gallon for the first time since February, before Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And the most common price for gas is $2.99. Gas prices are down about $1.52 per gallon since June for a savings of $160 per month for American families with two cars. Finally, American consumers showed continued strength with record holiday spending, including on Black Friday and also this week on Cyber Monday. According to the National Retail Federation, a record number of holiday shoppers returned to stores from Thanksgiving through Monday, and Adobe Analytics reported consumers spent a record $35 billion online over just 5 days. It will take time to bring inflation back down to normal, but the American people showed that they still have confidence that the president's economic plan is indeed working. As the president said yesterday, he'll work with anyone, Democrat, Republican, or independent, with ideas on how we can provide working families breathing room and build a stronger, more resilient economy for the long haul. That's what the American people voted for in November. With that, Colleen, you want to kick us off?
Sure, thank you. There are reports that the Islamic State leader has been killed, and wondered if you could confirm that and also whether the U.S. was involved at all in if it was a U.S.-led attack or, I'm sorry, operation.
So earlier today, ISIS publicly announced the death of al-Qurashi, the overall leader of ISIS. This follows the same fate of his predecessor, Aji Abdullah, who was killed in a U.S.-led raid in February in northwestern Syria. We are pleased to see the removal of ISIS's top leaders in such quick succession. The United States remains committed to countering the global threat from ISIS and stands ready to work with international partners who share that same goal. We will build on these counterterrorism successes, and we will keep that pressure on for sure. As far as any involvement by the U.S. As it relates to the death of Al-Qa'ashi, there was no result. It was not a result of any U.S. action. I can confirm.
Okay, thank you. And then another question on Indiana. The Indiana Attorney General has asked the state medical board to sanction the doctor who spoke out about performing an abortion on a 10-year-old girl from Ohio. I just wondered what the White House's thoughts were on that effort, whether it, could potentially send a chilling effect or cause a chilling effect to other doctors, whether doctors should be speaking out about this. I just sort of wondered where the White House stood on that.
So I can't speak about the details of the Indiana AG's request to the medical board, but there's a couple things I do want to lay out and take a step back, because it's a truly horrifying situation. We're talking about a 10-year-old child here who was raped and could not receive health care in her home state of Ohio, and was forced to travel because she was raped and had to go to another state, clearly, as some of you have reported. A doctor who provided reproductive care to a child that was raped is now being accused of violating patient privacy by an elected official. That is what we're seeing, and that is what is currently happening. And if that was not enough, if that weren't enough, he is asking the state medical board to discipline the doctor for speaking out about patients in desperate need of care. And this is not about the concerns of the victim. This is not about the victim at all. This is an elected official going after a doctor for helping a child who was raped and seeking health care. And broadly speaking here, and you've heard us say this before, I know there was a lot of concern in here back in October on whether there was too much focus on women losing their constitutional right. And as you can see, there should be more concern. And these types of situations are very real, and they are very much interest of the American people. We saw that in this past election. This is something that the American people care about. This is something that women care about. They want us to continue to fight for their rights, to fight for the freedom that they've had for almost 50 years when Roe was in place. So the fact that Americans do not want politicians making their health care decisions for them, and we saw that from Kentucky to Michigan, Americans rejected backwards, dangerous proposals. But what we continue to see from Republican officials just across the country is that they want to take away that right, to take away that freedom. So the president and the vice president is going to do everything that they can to continue to fight for Americans' freedom and for their rights.
Okay, one more quick one.
Sure.
The Prince and Princess of Wales are going to be in Boston this Friday, I think. Will the president meet them or see them or hang out with them?
Hang out. Okay. So the president intends to greet the Prince and Princess of Wales when he is in Boston. We are still finalizing and working through the details, so I don't have anything more to share, any more specifics to share on that. Ken, Mary.
The president released a statement praising the House for passing this bill to avert a shutdown of the rail. He said he wants it on his desk immediately, but he didn't mention this separate bill guaranteeing 7 days of paid sick leave for rail workers. Does the president also back and support this legislation? Does he also want that on his desk?
So I just want to say a couple of things that the president believes that a bill averting a rail strike needs to reach his desk by this weekend. He is very clear about that, because we need to protect the American families from a potential devastating effects of a rail shutdown. And we have talked about that numerous times, and the president was really clear about that when he put out his statement earlier this week. The president, of course, he supports paid sick leaves for all Americans, including rail workers, but he does not support any bill or amendment that will delay getting this bill to his desk by this Saturday. And he's been very clear about that. that. Again, he's a president for all Americans, and he believes that we need to avert a potential, this potential shutdown that would have a devastating effect on our economy, a devastating effect on jobs, a devastating effect in our communities across the country and our farms as well.
What is the president's message to union workers, rail workers across the country, you know, who backed the president, who helped him get elected, believed that he was standing with them, and who feels as if he has betrayed them?
Look, the president, as you know, has been called by unions and labor leaders as a pro-union president. And he takes that very seriously. He is the most pro-union president in history. And he's worked tirelessly to secure victories for unions and for workers since he was first elected to the Senate. So this is when it comes to labor, when it comes to union, this is something that he has worked towards in making sure that he delivers for what he called yesterday. If you listen to him during his Michigan statement, he said they were the backbone. They build our middle class, right? They were the best workers that we have in this country. And so, as a proud pro-union president, he's reluctant to override the ratifications procedures of individual unions, right? We have to remember there were 12 unions involved in this when the tentative agreement was done. When that agreement came out, it was praised. We received praise from rail unions and from folks and from the companies as well. And once that agreement came to fruition because of the work that this president did on September 15th, there was a cooling period, and it was ratified by eight unions of the 12. And so, look, we have to remember there are really good pieces in this deal. There's a 24% pay raise and a $5,000 bonus. No changes in co-pays, deductibles, or co-insurance costs. Some time off for routine preventive and emergency medical care, and protecting the two-man crew. This is a deal that has a lot of benefits. But again, he wants to make sure that we avert a shutdown that would be detrimental to our economy.
Europe and France are concerned about Buy America provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act, and President Macron is expected to raise that during his visit. What will the President Biden say in response?
So I'm not going to get into hypotheticals about what may come up in that conversation. It's hypothetical because it hasn't happened yet. They may have flagged that. I'm not going to speak for France, clearly. I'm just speaking for this president. I speak for the president of the United States. So right now it is a hypothetical that it will come up, right? But I will say this. The Inflation Reduction Act, as we know, is historical. It is an investment that will, a historical investment that will deal with climate change in a real way. It will lower costs for American families if you think about health care, if you think about energy costs as well. And just a couple of things. There's a number of provisions that will contribute to the growth of clean energy sector globally, and that is important to note. It presents significant opportunities for European firms, as well as benefits to EU energy security, and this is not a zero-sum game for us. And so we see a constructive path of engagement with the EU on this, and we continue to discuss this issue at all levels of the U.S. government. I'm just not going to get ahead of what will be on the agenda in their conversation.
Like from your prepared response, that you're prepared to talk about it.
We're always prepared to talk about issues that may come up. Certainly with our allies. As you know, France is our oldest ally, and the president looks forward to meeting with President Macron. We read the news reports and your reportings as well. We've heard President Macron's comments. Of course, we're ready to have that conversation, but just don't want to get into a potential hypothetical. Maybe it comes up and maybe it doesn't. But the president is very proud of this Inflation Reduction Act. It will have true benefits for American families, and it's historical.
Do you have a response to Fed Chair Powell's remarks about inflation today?
I have a little bit of what we wanted to say about that. Give me one second here. When it comes to his comments, as you know, we are very clear about the Fed having their independence and respecting that independence. As we know, prior presidents have not made that clear, and it was not something that they did. Many of them did not do. So we want to give the Fed the space to do the work that they need. They have the best monetary tools to deal with inflation. Our economic team continues to believe that thanks to the president's economic team and his economic plan, we can bring inflation down without giving up the historic gains that we have made. Our economy has added 10 million jobs, and unemployment is near a 50-year low. And so, as I just stated, we saw that economic growth last quarter that was even stronger than previously estimated. It was previously estimated at 2.6%. Now we're seeing at 2.9%. So, again, you know, as the chair said today, bottlenecks in goods production are easing, and goods price inflation appears to be easing. And so that is important. But I want to be very clear. We're going to give them their ability to work in an independent way and not going to interfere.
And bless you.
Thanks, Karen. Just to follow up a little bit on Mary's question, given the close ties the administration has with the labor movement, have there been conversations behind the scenes kind of explaining the why here or kind of detailing the decision-making process with the labor movement?
So, I mean, look, and we have said this. I said this the other day. Secretary Walsh has been in touch with the rail union. Secretary Buttigieg has been in touch with the companies. The president has been clearly in touch with congressional leaders in his administration, and Secretary Vilsack has been in close touch with the agriculture sector. But just to give a little bit of a timeline here, you know, the president and his team have been directly engaged in supporting negotiations and averting a shutdown for months now. In July, as you recall, like we've talked about it right here in the briefing room, the unions asked him to constitute a presidential emergency board, a request they made because they know he is indeed a pro-union president, and he did just that. After the PEB, he brought the full weight of his administration to bear to keep the parties at the table and to get employers to make concessions, and they did. So he made it possible for the unions to secure tentative agreements in September that secured a higher pay. I just mentioned 24%, and you've seen that also in the president's statement, and a $5,000 bonus for workers. Those tentative agreements kept our rail system working and prevented a disruption to our economy. And just want to add, you know, there was that cooling off period once that September 15th tentative agreement was made. In that cooling off period, those 12 unions were given the opportunity for them to ratify or vote for that tentative agreement. Again, 8 of them ratified it. That's a majority of the 12. And so we wanted to give the last 2 unions who voted in late November their opportunity to make their voices heard. And so that's kind of how you saw the process the last couple of months. We've been engaged. We've been working with them on coming to this tentative agreement. And now we're at a place where the president has been very clear that we have to avert a rail shutdown. And he's asking Congress to act. He's very pleased by what the speaker and the leadership was able to do today in the House to move that forward.
Can I just one more quick one? This happened just an hour or two ago, so maybe a little bit too new, but there were roughly a dozen Republican senators threatened to block the annual defense policy bill, which we need to finish before the end of the year, unless they did a vote on an amendment that would end the military's COVID vaccine mandate. One, do you have a response to that question? Two, more broadly, is there any thought to making changes on that anytime in the future?
So look, this is the first I'm hearing of this. As you said, it's very new, and so I will certainly let the Department of Defense speak to their own COVID vaccine requirement, and so I'm just not going to get more into that. I'll talk to the team further as to exactly what the specifics are of these members and what they're saying.
I just want to go back and clarify on the proposed 7-day paid leave amendment. Standalone that was passed by the House, however it's taken on the Senate. Does the President support that proposal?
proposed?
So the president, again, believes that it is important to avert a rail strike, and that is what he's focusing on. And he wants to bring, make sure that there's an agreement that's brought to his desk by the weekend to protect American families, to protect jobs, to protect farms, and to protect communities across the country. The president, of course, supports paid sick leave for all Americans and for including rail workers. This is something, as you have seen him over the past almost 2 years, talk about that and trying to move forward and making sure in getting paid sick leave. But he understands there are not 60 votes, right? There are not 60 votes in the Senate to make that happen. His number one priority is that is making sure that we get this done. So he does not support any bill or amendment that will delay a bill that's getting to his desk by Saturday.
Two other quick ones. Do you have a plan to meet with the new House Democratic leadership?
I don't have anything to preview for you at this time on a meeting. I don't have any calls to preview at this time.
This was brought up on a background call yesterday previewing today's Tribal Nations Conference. And those on that call said they didn't have anything on. I'm just curious, maybe you do. Does the president support the Cherokee Nation's push to get a non-voting delegate to the House of Representatives, which would make good on an 1835 treaty that was supposed to see one?
I'm just going to repeat what you heard on the background call. We just don't have anything to share on that at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Corrine. Kevin McCarthy said that he invited President Biden down to the border. How does the president RSVP?
We know
the president's never been down to the border. The possible next speaker says that he wants him to go with him, so is he going to?
So, look, he's been there. He's been to the border. And since he took office...
When did he go to the border?
Since he took office, the President Biden has been taking action to fix our immigration system and secure our border. And that's why on day one he put forward an immigration reform piece of legislation to deal with what is currently happening at the border. But, you know, that we're not seeing that from Republicans. We're not seeing a willingness to work with us on fixing a situation that's been around for decades now. Instead, they're doing political stunts. That's what they want to do. That's how they want to take care of the situation. But in the meantime, you know, the president has secured record levels of funding for the Department of Homeland Security. We have over 23,000 agents working to secure the border. We've taken thousands of smugglers off the streets, and we're cutting down on asylum processing times. And a number of individuals arriving unlawfully from northern Central America and Venezuela is coming down significantly because of the actions that the president has taken.
Okay. On another subject, when are you guys going to delete the White House Twitter account?
Why would we do that?
Well, you're saying that you're keeping an eye on Twitter because it might not be a suitable platform, so why use it?
Look, I want to be very clear here. The president has always said, and he has been very, very clear in his belief, that it is important social media platforms to continue to take steps to reduce hate speech and misinformation. And we'll continue to say that. But media platforms make independent choices about their information that they present. And so, look, I don't have anything to share on any policy or any changes that we will be making. We have multiple platforms, as you know, that we utilize to communicate with the American people.
When you say that you're going to be monitoring some of the speech on there, if you see something that you don't like, would you try to shut Twitter down?
So look, you know, when you talk about monitoring, you know, it is, I hate to break it to you, Peter, just like everybody else, we very much monitor the news. We pay close attention to everything that you all are reporting, and Twitter's in the news a lot. And so that's what we're paying attention to. We're paying attention to what is in the news and what is being reported on the misinformation that's out there. Let's not forget there's groups like NAACP, the Anti-Defamation League, and the public health leaders have been very vocal about their concerns as well. So, yes, we are reading what you all are writing and looking at what you all are reporting about the misinformation that is out there. But, you know, I would hope that all Americans organizations, including social media companies, civil rights organizations I just laid out, including Fox as well, will agree that we need to call out hate speech and misinformation.
Hi, Kareem, thank you. Was there any consensus among the leaders yesterday about how to deal with the debt ceiling in the meeting the president hosted?
So I don't have anything beyond what we laid out for you all in the in our readout. And as you know, again, I don't have anything else to lay out. I'm not going to go beyond what we talked about. We talked about as you know, the president talked to them about the four leaders about the rail situation, the rail strike, and averting that, on making sure that we don't put the American people through a potential economic downturn, and also the government funding. Those are the things that that I can tell you that they did definitely speak about.
And that was from the White House news conference. Of course, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre answering questions from the press, particularly concerned about the conflict with the railways. And what can be done to avert a strike? The Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. issued a statement regarding the railway workers from Chicago. He states, "Rail workers have a right to strike nonviolently, demanding their just pay and benefits like sick leave. They have been unkind to these workers. Railroads are partially funded by the government. Workers have a right to benefits. The Senate should pass the resolution immediately. When the train stops, the mail stops. When the train stops, the food stops. People can't get to work. It's ungodly. It's unreal." Reverend Jackson made his comments just days before a possible December 9th railroad strike. Workers want 7 days of sick leave. They are opposed to policies like being penalized for going to the doctor or even fired for doing so. They want better job conditions and pay. That was a statement of support for railway workers issued by Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, head of the Rainbow Push Coalition. In other news, a documentary chronicles the fight for reparations for slavery in America. It will be shown December 3rd at the DuSable Museum in Chicago. The documentary, The Big Payback, chronicling the historic push for reparations in the city of Evanston, Illinois, and nationally for reparations, Bill H.R. 40, will be presented in Chicago on Saturday, December 3rd at 5 o'clock p.m. at the DuSable Black History Museum and Education Center at 740 East 56th Street, 56th Place. The event is sponsored by Black United Fund of Illinois, Inc., BUFI, in collaboration with the MacArthur Foundation and Reparations United. The documentary follows the fight by former Evanston Alderman Robin Simmons to obtain passage of the $10 million reparations bill and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee's continued fight to pass H.R. 40. The documentary features Robin Ruth Simmons and H.R. 40's lead sponsor, U.S. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. While serving as an alderman, Robin Ruth Simmons introduced the idea to the city of Evanston in 2019 and said, "The restorative housing reparations program created to remedy some of the harm caused by the city's historical anti-black housing policies. When it was approved last year, it was considered the country's first reparations program." That's all for now. I'm Naima Latif, and this is On Air Daily News. Join us again tomorrow at 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, and you can listen in at www.onairradio.com. Until tomorrow, enjoy the rest of your day.